Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, I can't get over it. So low, I can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Hello and welcome to the Holy Half Hour here on 3TFM with me, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Saltcoats North Parish Church. And when I say Holy Half Hour, I mean it more than usual this time, for our topic today is saints. Everyone knows that Halloween is on the 31st of October, but fewer people seem to realise that the 1st of November, the next day, is All Saints' Day. The word Halloween is a combination of hallow and een. Hallow means holy, as in the Lord's Prayer, Our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your name is holy, you are holy. And een is a shortened version of evening. So Halloween means holy evening, the night before All Saints' Day. Somehow a long-standing Christian festival going back 1,300 years has been hijacked for commercial purposes into the weird and wacky Halloween that we recognise today. In this programme, let's get behind the masquerade and the caricature, which is the commercial Halloween, and consider All Saints' Day. As Christians, we've a long and rich heritage in the faith. So many people have gone before us and left us wonderful examples to inspire us. We're indebted to some famous, great martyrs and heroes of the faith. And we're also grateful to our parents, grandparents, teachers, ministers, youth leaders, whoever it was who helped to lead us to Jesus. Yes, there are some great saints, but also remember that they were all little babies at one time, boys and girls, ordinary folk like ourselves. But with Jesus' help, and forced often by circumstances beyond their own control, they rose to the occasion to do extraordinary things. It can be a cop-out to say, I'm no saint. These people come from another planet. I could never be like them. When St. Paul wrote to the Corinthians, he called them the saints at Corinth. And he knew well that they were far from being goody-goody, perfect human beings, worthy of featuring in a stained glass window. They were a right bunch of humanity. Nevertheless, Paul addresses them as saints. He meant that they had joined the Church of Jesus Christ and were trying to follow him. They had all enrolled in the Christian congregation, otherwise affectionately known as Sinners Anonymous. The church never has been a home for perfect saints. It's a hospital for sinners, recovering sinners, trying to kick the habit of sinning, and saints insofar as they profess the faith and try to live it. So saints don't always look like saints, as Charlie Lansborough knows well.
Alf Pritchard, who inspired Walking on My Memories, had a marvellous wife. Her name was Alice. And Alice spent a great deal of her time collecting for the Church of England Children's Society. I was on a bus one day going downtown, and it was bitterly cold. And who did I see on the corner but little Alice, who by this time was very ill, collecting, rattling her box, still collecting for the Church of England Children's Society. The pure goodness brought tears to my eyes. God bless you, Alice. The first verse of this song is about you, and each of the rest of the verses in this song represents somebody just like you, the everyday saints.
Her heart was like a jewel, she polished every day with little acts of kindness as she went along her way. She was no picture for your wall, sometimes saints don't look like saints at all. He raised her children by himself, and they were left alone. He fed their wounded hearts with love until they had their own. He seemed so insignificant and small. Sometimes saints don't look like saints at all. Saints aren't always blessed with saintly faces. Angels can be found in unexpected places. They're not that hard to recognize. You can tell them by the little bits of heaven in their eyes. He drinks too much and swears more than he should, some people say. But they don't count the precious hours of life he gives away to help the weak and humble when they fall. Sometimes saints don't look like saints at all. Saints aren't always blessed with saintly faces. Angels can be found in unexpected places. They're not that hard to recognize. You can tell them by the little bits of heaven in their eyes. Sometimes saints don't look like saints at all. Saints aren't always blessed with saintly faces. Angels can be found in unexpected places. They're not that hard to recognize. You can tell them by the little bits of heaven in their eyes.
When you think of saints, who do you think of? Bible characters like Peter or Paul, Matthew or Luke, Stephen, the first Christian martyr? Or there's early Christians like Polycarp, Ignatius, Athanasius, Jerome, Ambrose, Augustine? Or folk who brought Christianity to Scotland, like Ninian, Columba, Queen Margaret? There are Christian giants like Francis of Assisi, Benedict, Ignatius Loyola, Michelangelo, Vincent de Paul, Wycliffe, Tyndale, Bunyan, Cranmer. Or how about reformers like Martin Luther, John Calvin, John Knox, George Wishart? There are so many great Christians over the years. John and Charles Wesley, George Whitfield, Elizabeth Fry, William Wilberforce, or the Covenanters, the Pilgrim Fathers, Mary Slessor and David Livingstone, William Booth, George MacLeod, Martin Luther King. But there are millions of ordinary saints, if you pardon the expression. I mean unsung heroes, who will never be called Saint so-and-so, and will never decorate a stained glass window, but they do amazing things and live extraordinary lives. They're an inspiration to those who know them. They light up our lives and they make us smile. They hold our hand and walk with us through the valley and help us to make it through the dark nights. They are our heroes. They are the wind beneath our wings. They raise us up.
When I am down and all my soul so weary, when troubles come and my heart burdened be, then I am still and wait.
here in the silence until you come and settle a while with me. You raise me up so I can stand on mountains. You raise me up to walk on stormy seas. I am strong when I am on your shoulders. You raise me to more than I can be.
I want to share with you the stories of three famous saints who helped to bring Christianity to Scotland. Yes, they do adorn our stained glass, but they were ordinary people too, just like us. It was Jesus who enabled them to rise to extraordinary things. And the first one is St. Ninian of Whithorn. In France, in the 4th century, there was a soldier called Martin. One day he met a man who was completely destitute. Martin himself had only one garment, but he cut the garment in two and gave half to the beggar. That night Martin had a dream, and in it he saw Jesus, and guess what? Jesus was wearing half of Martin's cloak. Martin became a Christian. He left the army, became a monk. Later he became the Bishop of Tours in France. He founded a large monastery with about 2,000 monks. It became the chief training school for missionaries sent to Celtic areas. One of these missionaries, who was very much influenced by Martin, and who went to Scotland in 397 AD, that's 1,620 years ago, was Ninian. He was born in the middle of the 4th century, the son of a chief in the Solway district. He trained in Rome, and there he probably met people like Jerome and Ambrose, the Bishop of Milan. But Martin of Tours was the biggest influence on Ninian. The Venerable Bede called Ninian a most revered bishop and a most holy man. Ninian came to Whithorn, close to the Solway. You can still see St. Ninian's cave and other ruins today. And he built a church and a monastery called Candida Casa, meaning White House, which is a copy of Martin's great establishment in France. By the way, Martin of Tours died in 397, that's 1,620 years ago. The monastery was not meant to be a safe haven from the world, cutting themselves off and keeping themselves pure and untainted by the messy world. On the contrary, the monastery was a launchpad for missions to the world. Disciples were attracted to the monastery, and disciples went out from the monastery. They were breathing in and breathing out, sort of. They came in to worship and they went out to serve. What a lovely model of the Christian church, a life of devotion and a ministry of mission. It's the rhythm of life. Jesus took time to pray alone, to build up his disciples, and Jesus and his disciples went out and about ministering. Facts about Ninian are hard to come by, but we get an idea of his travels from place names. You get St Ninian's churches in Stirling, Blairgowrie, Angus, Kincardine, Aberdeenshire even. There's even connections north of Inverness and as far as Shetland and way down into England. People like Finian came over to Whithorn from Ireland to learn from Ninian. Later, Finian became head of the important monastery at Moville, near Belfast, where Columba received part of his training. Ninian had a sense of call and vocation. He fulfilled his call. He made a beginning and others followed, people like Columba. He had a hard life. It took considerable courage to try to convert the pagan Picts. But God gave Ninian faith and courage and love and success. The same is true for us and the church in every age. We are each individually and all together called and commissioned to go into our world and preach the good news of Jesus. It never is easy, but the same God fits his disciples with faith and courage, love and success. Here's the Peter Knight Singer. Another great person who brought Christianity to Scotland is St. Columba of Iona. He was a tall, handsome man with thick, curly, fair hair and sparkling grey eyes. He loved singing, fishing, riding fast horses and sailing in the teeth of storms. He was a prince and expected to become King of Ireland. He was above all a Christian at the time when most Irish people were pagans. Columba turned his back on kingship, gave away his riches, and became a student monk at Clonard. The leader of the Clonard brothers used to say, "The greatest discovery a man can make is that God loves you, and you can live in the light of that love every day of your life." In 563, Columba and 12 companions, family and friends, set sail in a coracle, a frail wicker boat, to cross the Irish Sea. They landed first at Oranse, but found that they could still see Ireland. So to avoid homesickness temptations, they pushed on. Then they landed in Iona in June 563 at Port na Cruach, the Bay of the Coracle it's called. They knelt down and dedicated themselves and their mission to God. They built mud huts with thatched roofs, for they were crusaders and not comfort seekers. Iona was not an escape from life, but a base for mission. All kinds of people would come to Iona to see and marvel at this band of men, who worked for love and not gain, who broke off to pray, but who happily combined prayer and menial tasks. They were a light in a dark world, salt of the earth, examples, inspirations, and they preached by their lifestyle. What a challenge to us today. Beyond that, they went on missionary journeys. They tried to convert the fierce Picts. They gave the first recorded sighting of the Loch Ness Monster as well. Columba and colleagues befriended families one by one. It wasn't a mass movement. And they preached by word and actions and worship. Columba was known as the kind Columba. His fellow monks called him Father. He was a brave man, tackling King Brude, the Picts' leader, and did it unarmed as well, except for his convictions. He and Brude became quite good friends, and Brude was converted to Christianity. He took on the Druids and the pagan practices as well. Columba could both comfort and challenge. Columba performed the first ever Christian consecration of a king in British history, King Aidan, from whom Queen Elizabeth is descended. Columba loved people so much that bad people became good, good people became better, and unbelievers became Christians. During his life and afterwards, little Ionas were planted all over the place. For example, the holy island of Lindisfarne. These little Ionas radiated light and love and practical service. They were centres of education and worship, and they improved people's lives in every way. Isn't that what we as congregations should be doing today? And he left a legacy. Iona blossomed even more after his death. There's a tribute. To set things up so that our children can take things further than we can. St. Columba had lived and ministered in Scotland for 34 years when he died on Sunday the 9th of June 597, 420 years ago. St. Columba had a strong personality, a deep faith and devotion. He was educated, a poet, a good singer, a leader, but a leader who led by love rather than fear. He was fond of animals, he was compassionate to people, and blessed with common sense. On the negative side, he shared the superstitions of his age. He was a bit short-tempered, he was even vindictive, and able to curse as well as bless. But he stands out as a giant, as a missionary, a statesman. He did much to bring Picts and Scots under the Christian faith and to help create the Scottish nation. He was an apostle to Scotland. No one has left a deeper impression on our country's soil. Here's Nick and Anita Hay singing Open to You, a Celtic song.
My eyes be open to your presence, my ears to hear your call.
Thank you.
hard, ordinary person who was called and enabled by Jesus to do extraordinary service and to help to bring Christianity to us is St. Augustine of Canterbury, not to be confused with the more famous Augustine of Hippo in Africa. Augustine lacked many qualities of greatness. He did not volunteer, he was sent. He didn't keep on, he turned back. He didn't see things in the wider perspective, but got caught up in the details. He was not adaptable. He failed in a lot of respects. But he did give England its first Christian king. He began the conversion of England. He was the first of 100 Archbishops of Canterbury. He linked England to the rest of Christendom. And he did all of this in the last 7 years of his life. In 574, Pope Gregory gave his family home and fortune to the church. The great house in Rome became the monastery of St. Andrew, with himself as one of its monks. From this monastery in 597, Gregory sent 40 monks to Kent, with Augustine as their leader. The monks and Augustine did not want to go, but monks take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, so they obeyed and went. The monks even sent Augustine back to Pope Gregory to ask him to release them from this ordeal. Gregory refused, saying, "Better not to set out on the right way than having set out to think of turning back." So they went on. King Ethelbert was not very keen on Augustine and his 40 monks, but he did allow them to stay and preach. The Venerable Bede describes their life. Prayer, watching, fasting, preaching to any who would hear, taking nothing from those they taught, living as they preached, ready to suffer and die for the faith. And so several believed and were baptized. On Pentecost Eve, June the 1st, 597, Bede records, "Among the rest, the king believed and was baptized." What a tribute to their lives and witness that is. Bede goes on, "Then great numbers began to come. By Christmas Day, 10,000 people were baptized. A mass movement had begun." St. Ninian, St. Columba and St. Augustine inspire us and challenge us to our faith and mission in our generation. Martin of Tours gave half his cloak. Augustine didn't want to go but went nevertheless. Ninian and Columba's monasteries were launch pads for mission. They had that rhythm of devotion and service, prayer and mission. They were light and salt and examples. Can we do likewise in our generation? The Bible, Hebrews chapter 11, lists all kinds of heroes of the faith and it ends by saying, "Shall I go on? There isn't time for me to tell you about..." Well, sadly, our holy half hour has run out too, but let me leave you the last words to the book of Hebrews, which finishes by saying this: "Since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us run with determination the race which is set before us, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher, pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame. So keep looking to Jesus, and may you and I join the procession of all the saints who go marching into heaven. Bye for now."
Got converted, she has turned her back on me.